Picture this. You're on a 2-mile final. The runway is right there in front of you. Winds are 15 gusting to 22, 45 degrees off the runway heading, and to track the centerline, your nose is pointed about 20 degrees into the wind. Now comes the moment every student dreads and every experienced pilot has a strong opinion about. Do you ride that crab all the way to the flare and kick it straight at the last second, or do you set up a wing-low slip right now and fly it all the way to the pavement? I'm Pattern. This is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar, and today we're going deep on crosswind landings. Not the overview version you got in ground school. The real one, the one that explains why you sometimes drift sideways on touchdown even when you thought you had it, and what to do about it before it becomes a ground loop or a bent gear leg. Before we get into it, quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every milestone in your flying career. First solo, private certificate, instrument rating, commercial, beautifully made. Meaningful way to mark the moments that actually matter. If you're in training right now, or you know someone who is, check them out at aviationsoul.com. All right, crosswind landings. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, Airplane Flying Handbook dedicates an entire chapter to this. The Airman Certification Standards, or ACS, list crosswind landings as a required task with specific performance standards. And the accident record tells us that runway excursions during crosswind landings are one of the most consistent contributors to general aviation damage reports, year after year. This is not just a technique problem, it's a physics problem. And once you understand the physics, the technique makes a lot more sense. Here's what's actually happening. When wind hits your airplane from the side, it pushes you laterally across the runway. On approach, you compensate by crabbing into the wind, pointing the nose upwind of the runway heading so your track over the ground stays aligned with the centerline. Simple enough, you're using the airplane like a boat tacking across a current. The problem comes at touchdown. The moment your wheels contact the pavement, the ground becomes involved, and the ground does not care about your crab angle. If your airplane is pointed sideways relative to the runway when the tires hit, you get a side load on the landing gear. In a nose-wheel airplane, that can mean anything from a tire scuff to a structural failure, depending on speed and angle. In a tail-wheel airplane, it can mean an immediate and enthusiastic ground loop. So you have to align the aircraft with the runway centerline before or at the moment of touchdown. That's the requirement. The two techniques are simply different answers to the same question. When do you do it, and how? Let's talk about the crab and kick first. You fly the entire approach in a crab. You track the centerline, stay on glide path, and let the crosswind do its thing while you point the nose wherever you need to in order to track straight. Then, just before touchdown, you apply rudder to yaw the nose into alignment with the runway. The appeal is obvious. A crabbing airplane is aerodynamically clean. Both wings are level, airspeed is stable, and the approach looks and feels normal right up until the last few seconds. The challenge is also obvious. You have to make that yaw correction at precisely the right moment. Too early, and you start drifting. Too late, and the tires contact the pavement while you're still pointed sideways. And in a gusting crosswind, the timing window is not as wide as it sounds on the ground. This technique is commonly used in high-performance aircraft and airliners. The Boeing 737 is typically landed with a crab right up to the flare, with rudder used to align the fuselage as the main gear touches. The airplane's gear geometry handles a small amount of side load at that point. Most light general aviation aircraft have narrower margins, and the consequences of mistiming are more immediate. Now the continuous side slip, also called the wing low technique. You set up the crosswind correction earlier in the approach, typically turning final. You lower the upwind wing, which tilts the lift vector toward the wind. The airplane wants to slide toward the low wing, but you use upwind rudder, the pedal on the same side as the low wing, to prevent the nose from turning. You end up in a slip, and the net result is that the airplane tracks straight down the centerline, the fuselage is aligned with the runway, and one main gear sits lower than the other. When you touch down, the upwind main gear contacts first. There's no side load because the airplane was already aligned. You hold that aileron pressure through the rollout, adding more as the airplane decelerates and the controls become less effective. The advantages here are significant. You arrive aligned. You can see what the crosswind is actually doing through the entire approach. You're not making a time-critical correction at the worst possible moment. And if the wind shifts or gusts, you adjust continuously. The challenge. Holding a clean slip through a full final requires real rudder discipline. The cross controls feel unnatural to students. And if you let up on that upwind rudder and let the nose turn downwind, you can drift off centerline in the wrong direction. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The wing low technique is harder to learn and easier to use. The crab and kick is easier to learn and harder to use. That sounds backwards, but it makes sense when you think about where the difficulty is concentrated. With the crab, the hard part comes at the worst time, right at the roundout and flare. When your scan is busiest, your altitude margin is smallest, and you have the least time to recover from a mistimed kick. With the wing low technique, the hard part is learning to hold the slip comfortably through the whole approach, but once you have it, the actual touchdown is almost anticlimactic. You're already aligned. You just let the airplane settle. Let's walk through this together, step by step. For a typical crosswind landing in a Cessna 172, wind is at 200 degrees, speed 12 knots, runway heading is 360. That's a direct 45-degree crosswind from the left, a left crosswind landing. On downwind, you're already thinking about this. You extend slightly to compensate for the wind pushing you toward the runway. You turn base a little later than normal. On base, you feel the wind pushing you toward final. You stay high and tight because the wind is helping you get there. Turning final, here's where the technique decision matters. If you're going wing low, set it up here. Roll left aileron to lower the left wing. The airplane wants to turn left. Apply right rudder to hold the nose on the runway centerline. Now you're in a left wing low, right rudder slip, tracking straight down final. Check your alignment constantly. The runway should be moving straight under you. If you're drifting right, you need more left aileron or a deeper slip. If you're drifting left, you have too much. At the flare, maintain the wing low correction. This is where a lot of students relax the aileron because the flare feels like the landing is almost done. It is not. The flare is where the wind is most dangerous. You're close to the ground with little room to fix a drift. The left main gear touches first. You let the right main settle. You keep the left aileron in. As you decelerate on the runway, the controls become less effective, so you gradually add more left aileron to keep the upwind wing from lifting in the crosswind. By the time you're at taxi speed, you may have full left aileron in. That is correct. That is exactly what you want on the rollout. Track the centerline with rudder steering. The upwind aileron stays in until you've got the airplane under full control at a slow speed. Now, if you use the crab and kick technique instead, the approach looks different. You track down final in a crab. The nose is pointed maybe 15 degrees into the wind, left of the runway centerline. Both wings are level. As you begin the flare, the timing window opens. You start to apply right rudder to yaw the nose right toward runway heading. Simultaneously, you may add a touch of left aileron to lower the left wing and prevent drift as the crab corrects. The goal is to have the nose pointed down the runway centerline at the moment the main gear contacts. Then you continue with the same rollout. The difficult part is that the flare and the crab correction have to happen at the same time. Students often forget the aileron when they're concentrating on the rudder kick, and they touch down tracking straight but drifting sideways. Or they make the correction too early and spend the last 50 feet fighting the slip. They just set up unintentionally. A practical recommendation, if you're a student still working toward your check ride, learn the wing low technique first, get comfortable with cross controls, understand what a slip feels like and how the airplane responds to adjustments. The slip is a fundamental skill, and mastering it on every crosswind landing makes you better at every other slip-related scenario. Slipping to a landing with no flaps, forward slips to lose altitude over an obstacle. These all come from the same place. If you're a more experienced pilot who has always ridden the crab, consider a session with a certified flight instructor, or CFI, focused on the wing low approach. You may be surprised at how much easier the actual touchdown feels when you arrive already aligned. A few common mistakes worth naming directly. The first is ballooning on the touchdown. Wind shear close to the ground, meaning a change in wind speed with altitude, can catch you off guard. You've got your slip set up, you're on glide path, and then the wind suddenly decreases just above the runway. Lift drops with it and the airplane sinks faster than expected. If you're surprised and haul back on the stick, you can stall or cause a hard landing. The fix is to recognize that this can happen and to fly the airplane all the way to the ground, not to the threshold. The second is relaxing the upwind aileron on rollout. The wind doesn't stop trying to lift the upwind wing just because you've touched down in a strong crosswind. A gust can get under that wing and try to weather vane your airplane. Keep the aileron in, increase it as you slow down. The third is carrying too much speed. Some pilots add extra airspeed on gusty approaches, which is sometimes appropriate. But extra speed means a longer float, and a longer float in a crosswind means more time for the wind to push you sideways. Know your airplane's recommended approach speed from the pilot's operating handbook. Know what a reasonable gust addition looks like. Don't just add 10 knots because it feels safer without thinking through what that costs you on the runway. The fourth mistake is fixating on the centerline stripe and losing sight of the far end of the runway. Keep your eyes moving to the runway end during the flare. Near field fixation causes ballooning, late roundouts, and misjudged landings. One more thing worth understanding. Every aircraft's pilot's operating handbook lists a maximum demonstrated crosswind component. For the Cessna 172, that number is typically around 15 knots. That is not a structural limit. It is not a certification limit. It is the crosswind component at which a test pilot successfully demonstrated a landing during the certification flight test program. The actual capability of the aircraft and a competent pilot is often higher. That said, as a student or low-time private pilot, treating the demonstrated crosswind as your personal limit is a very reasonable decision. Build up gradually, fly crosswind landings in light winds until the technique is automatic. Then try it in moderate conditions. Know your limits before you're standing on final trying to decide whether to attempt a landing in a crosswind you've never actually practiced. The ACS puts the standards for this in plain language. Smooth, timely, correct control application during the roundout and touchdown. Touchdown in the specified area with minimum side load on the main gear. Directional control and appropriate crosswind correction throughout the approach and landing. The examiner is looking for a stabilized approach, an aligned touchdown, and a controlled rollout. They're not looking for perfection in every wind condition. They're looking for a pilot who has a technique, executes it deliberately, and recovers from deviations. Here's the thing about crosswind landings. They are one of the most practiced things in aviation, and still one of the most common sources of ground damage in general aviation. The reason is simple. The skills are real, the wind is unpredictable, and complacency is easy to develop after a few hundred hours. The pilots who stay sharp on crosswinds are the ones who keep practicing them deliberately, even after they have a certificate. Go find a crosswind day. Ask your instructor to ride along if you haven't done it recently. Work both techniques. Know which one you reach for automatically and make sure you know the other one too. The FAA Airplane Flying Handbook is the primary source on technique here, and the ACS puts the performance standards in writing. Both are free on the FAA website. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. See you next time.